Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
26-year-old, slated to make his 21st start. High fastball, threw it by him. Oh, strike three called. Gene Bruce drives one high in the air, deep center field. Trout racing back, he's out of room, it is off the wall. Around third scoring is Encarnacion, and Gene Bruce doubles in the game's first run. And listen to those Indians fans. The 1-0 pitch drilled. Deep right center. That's in the alley. That is gone. A home run for Roberto Perez. Runners will be off on a 3-2 pitch. Line drive to the base, hit into left field. Lindor scores. Jackson right on his heels. He'll cross home plate as well. A two-out, two-run single for Edwin Encarnacion. And it's a three-run ninth for Cleveland. Line drive center field. Greg Allen breaks hard. He comes in, dives. Oh, what a sensational catch to end the game. 6-3, Indians a winner.
Whoever plays, there's one way to play. Then you don't have to worry about going into the playoffs and flicking a button on. You know, you can't do that. If you just play the game the right way, then you get to the playoffs and you're either good enough or you're not. It's not going to be because, well, we slowed down, we eased in. It's just a better way to go about it. All things said, I'd rather be able to set up your pitching. That's why staying out of that wild card game is so important. It doesn't mean you can't win, but you're going to be facing a team that you're not going to see the number one. It's an advantage to be able to set up your pitching.
Hit the home run, Swanee kind of told me when I came back in the dugout and let me know. And, you know, pretty cool thing to be a part of. I didn't hit many this year, but I guess I made one count. It's good to be in the Hall of Fame, I guess.
The whole bar has completely shifted. And I don't know that it's good or bad. It's just different. I know a lot of people argue it's bad because we have more homers, more strikeouts, more walks, so fewer balls in play, less base running, less action. But for better or for worse, this is the game we've got. And I just look at it and say, all right, this is our environment. And then we, like I said, we could break it again next year. And I'm going to have to make a lot of adjustments, I think, to how I look at players as prospects because of what I said earlier and the data you just gave, which is that average power means something very different today than it did even 3 or 4 years ago.
I think there's three things to look at this year that there's a reason why so many guys are hitting home runs now. First of all, guys are just bigger and stronger. You know, they're working out harder. They're working out younger. You have kids in high school hitting the ball 500 feet. So guys are just stronger nowadays. Number two, with the advent of the shift, players don't try to slap the ball around anymore. They've realized that if you get the ball in the air, you have a better chance of getting on base, you have a better chance of doing damage, and there's not a lot of singles out there on the infield, so guys are trying to hit the ball in the air. And then the third thing, the ball's reduced this year. I've just talked to guys throughout baseball. Pitchers are saying it, hitters are saying it. You know, you pick up the ball, it just feels different. I know MLB is going to tell you, no, there's nothing wrong, but when you see guys hitting balls on their front foot into the third deck 500 feet, it just doesn't happen like that every year. And so you got to think the baseballs are a little bit harder this year.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza right here on The Ticket, where we are. Toledo sports leader, so glad to have you aboard today. So many important things that we got to talk about. To what do you attribute the amazing amount of home runs that are being blasted this season? The record has been set, and there's still 2 weeks of baseball left to be played. My goodness. And how about your boy Alex Gordon? Not having a great year, not having a lot of home runs, but the home run, the record-breaking home run. It's very doubtful he'll have the last one, as, again, there are 2 weeks left to be played. And baseball is a different game. And I will tell you this, by the way, as we kind of analyze that a little bit, is also trying to analyze the Indians 25 out of 26. I'll get to that in a second, as well as a number of other things. But just with respect to the home run record, it underscores, for me anyway, the incredible season that some pitchers and some pitching staffs are having. With the ball being, I won't say juiced, but you heard Mark Teixeira there at the end of the montage. That's who you heard from, Alex Gordon, Keith Law, and then Mark Teixeira. Tech's doing some analysis now. Teixeira talking about the ball is harder. Okay, does that mean it's juiced per se? No, but it's got to be something when you got guys out there on their front foot jacking balls into the third deck, as you heard him say. The ball has got to be harder. There is something going on. And despite all of that, whatever it is going on, some of the pitching numbers put up by the best staff in baseball and the best bullpen in baseball, and I'm talking about the Indians, are really remarkable, even much more remarkable than they would ordinarily be. So it's on that note we start out this afternoon on the Extravaganza. It's 12 minutes after 3. We got you until 5 o'clock. Thanks for being a part of the conversation. Coming up, we've got a couple of good baseball guests. Actually, we have a baseball guest. Let me say that, a baseball guest, and then we got a college football guest. We're going to talk to Chris Cotillo, MLBDailyDish.com, in the next hour. That'll be at about 4:10 to talk about the home runs, to talk about the Indian streak, talk about the playoff positioning. Don't look now, but the Yankees have won 11 out of 13, and they are within 3 games of the Boston Red Sox. If everybody was kind of expecting the Red Sox to be the division champion, and they're still in the driver's seat, do not sleep on the Yankees, who got hot and got a W from cottage cheese. I mean, cotton candy. I mean, Charleston Chew. I mean, Karsten Charles, C.C. Sabathia, yesterday. Sorry, I will always have some of those names for him. So we've got a lot of baseball to talk about coming up with Chris Cotillo at about 4:10. Then at 4:40, we'll get into some college football as how about the trip that the Rockets have in front of them? 1 week after just a barn burner, the 54-51 Glass Bowl win over Tulsa, home cooking is over. Down to Coral Gables go the Rockets. That's right, they are at the U. Number 14 ranked. I think that's where they are now. No, maybe that isn't. Well, hold on. I got to get an updated ranking. It came out this week. Jim, do you know where they're ranked?
I think the 14 is correct. The 14
is
correct.
It is 14. Okay, yep. Good. I'm better than I thought I was. The Hurricanes. Not a team you want to be playing in this particular hurricane season. There's a reason why they call them the Hurricanes down there. That's who the Rockets are going to see on Saturday. And we're going to have Jason Candle joining Cush, to be more precise, coming up at about 4:40 or so this afternoon. Jim, do you realize now, as we talk a little bit more baseball here at the outset, you do realize, I assume, that the Indians win last night the first game of their West Coast trip out there in Los Angeles against the Angels, technically in Anaheim, but they call themselves Los Angeles. It's still so bizarre. That was their 25th win in their last 26 games.
Right.
You realize if it weren't for that itsy bitsy tiny slight hiccup that Trevor Bauer had against the Royals just a few days ago, that was when the streak ended. Last night would have been 26.
Yep.
Out of 26. They didn't lose to end the streak and then go into a losing funk. They came right back and continued winning, and last night would have tied the 1916 New York Giants at 26 wins. And tonight, everybody would be up. I don't care how late it takes to finish the West Coast game starting at 10:05. Everybody in the Eastern time zone, in Ohio, really everywhere, would be watching to see if they could break the all-time 1916 record and win number 27 tonight. And it just blows my mind. I mean, we knew it had to end. We knew 27 in a row was highly unlikely. But the reason we thought it was unlikely, at least me, Jim, I thought they could sweep the Royals. And then I thought if it was to come to a halt, it would be either at the beginning or in the second game of this this West Coast trip, as we know.
It's right. Just,
you don't go out west usually and have really, really solid records, let alone sweep teams. And do it.
Even if the teams aren't that good.
If the teams aren't that good, correct. No matter who you play, whether it's Mariners or Angels, or if you're out there playing terrible Padres or Giants teams, it doesn't matter. It's just tough to do. And, man, come to find out, had they not had that little hiccup, they just kept winning. They just keep winning. They're 19-1 in the month of September. They're 19-1. And they're 25-1, as we say, over the course of their last 26 games. I mean, that record could have been had tonight.
Yeah, it could have. Tonight would have been the day that the record would have possibly happened. And for anybody who did stay up a little late last night, towards the end of that one, you could tell how many people in that area, in that Southern California area, bought tickets for some of these games, because then, you know, yesterday would have been the tying of the record game had it been there. Because by the end of that game, and you heard the clip of the montage with Encarnacion's single in the ninth there, it sounded like a home game in the background at that point.
Oh, so, yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. Even though, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here in terms of the playoff standings, the wild card standings, the Angels are still alive.
They're probably the only team in what I've been referring to for months as the smorgasbord of mediocrity that is still in this thing. And by the way, they're going to gain a half game, are the Angels, before they even take the field later tonight, because the Yankees right now are smoking the Twins in the Bronx. That's going for a sweep. I want to say it was 9-3.
The Yankees are a mortal lock. Check that. The Yankees are a mortal lock with 2 weeks to play to be in the wild card game.
Oh, if they, at if the they minimum, yes.
If they don't win the division, as we said, they're only three back of the Red Sox. So, you know, crazy things have happened. You can make three games up in 2 weeks. But they're either in the, you know, as a division champion, or they are the wild card, because they've got a six-game bulge over the Twins, who only have a one-and-a-half-game lead over the Angels. So, you know, for the Indians to go out there and win last night the way that they did, they didn't do it against a team that's just playing out the string. They did it to a team that's fighting for a wild card spot to get into that wild card game, and their only game, every single game, every single half game matters to them. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal for them to go out there and win the way they did last night. And I just want people to understand and appreciate how difficult that is, and how difficult that continues to be, this 25-1 run. People just it's almost becoming yawn, another Indians win, as if you're just supposed to do this. And guess what? You're not. And guess what else? We had a conversation a couple of days ago, Jim, because I was on Facebook and reading some discussions and debates among Indians fans about who the fourth starter on Tito Francona's playoff roster, his 25-man for the first round, would be.
Ah, yes.
If they use a fourth starter. You know, in a five-gamer, you might just not even use a fourth starter, but it just depends on how things are going, if you need to.
Right. But most likely when you get to the ALCS and World Series, you would.
Where you do. Correct. Exactly. But the discussion on Facebook was for the first round, second round, whatever. But and the sneaking suspicion that many have is that, you know, Tito Francona loves Tomlin. And he wants Tomlin to be on that pitching, you know, on that roster and in that rotation. Instead of Mike Clevinger. And I watched last night, and I ask again, what are people smoking? And if Tito Francona, although if you look at Mike Clevinger, you probably wonder what he's smoking, because he doesn't exactly look like the prototypical ball player.
Right.
He looks more like a skateboard rider riding burnout. But I digress. That's, you know, kind of New York Mets style. But anyway, Mike Clevinger just continues to deal. He continues to be straight up nasty. Last night against the Angels, six innings, three hits, a single run, six strikeouts, two walks on the season. Mike Clevinger, who nobody would have predicted would be in the rotation and have this, but he's 11-5 with a 3.13.
That's insane.
Now, if you're scoring at home and you're interested in these sorts of things, let me also point out to you that Mike Clevinger's 3.13 is the second best ERA among the starters in the Indians' rotation.
That's even crazier.
Yes, it is. We all know, obviously, that Carlos Carrasco is considered the number two in the Indians' pitching rotation. You know, the Cy Young favorite, arguably, and he better be, Corey Kluber is the ace. And the number two pitcher in the rotation is Carlos Carrasco, and he has been nasty also. But be that as nasty as he may be, or may have been all season long, Carlos Carrasco's ERA sits at 3.48 as of today in his 30 starts, and Mike Clevinger in his 24 starts has a 3.13. How could anybody, mind you, 24 appearances, 21 starts. So nine fewer starts, yes, but that's not like over, you know, he's a second half guy who got inserted into the rotation. He's got nine starts and he's got a 3.13. That's proven over the long haul of the season's worth of starts. 21 starts is not, you know, some small number. Carrasco has a team high 30. Bauer has started 29. Kluber has started 27. And then it's Clevinger at 21 starts. and in 24 overall appearances, 3.13 is the second best on the team. How could anybody honestly consider Kush taking that guy's arm and that guy's production and that guy's performance out of the rotation as you head into, you know, the playoffs? No disrespect to Josh Tomlin.
Sure. Who goes tonight, by the way.
Yes. Josh Tomlin, in case you're wondering, has started 23 games, two more than Mike Clevinger. In case you're wondering, 5.04. Now, you could also argue, well, that was due to a really, really horrific start to the season. But if you look at the way he has pitched more recently, and come on, he's much better. And certainly that's true. You give him credit for that. But don't tell me he's been better than Clevinger, because he just flat out hasn't. In the month of July, Tomlin did have a five-start stretch in which he won three and got two no decisions. And his ERA was 3.41, which is right there with Carrasco. That was in July. August, he did not start because he went on the DL. Since he's been back in September, Tomlin has started three games. He is averaging just over 5 2/3 a start. And he has won two of the three, did not get a decision in the other. And his ERA this month is 2.76 in those three starts. So if we take his last 2 months of healthy baseball, Tomlin in July and Tomlin thus far in September, he's got an ERA of right around 3.1, very close to Clevinger's. 3.41 in the five starts in July, 2.76. So I'm just kind of averaging that out, you know, by eye. I'm not punching in the numbers in the calculator. But he is, he's got an ERA of probably right around 3.1 the way Clevinger has. But Clevinger has been doing this all season, not just Johnny come lately. He has been terrific, really, for a longer period of time. What do you think Tito does, Kush?
One would think he's got to have to go with Clevinger, right? I mean, just by the numbers, but you do bring up a good point, which is why I think you're bringing this up, that on some level, Tito may have a soft spot for Tomlin. And of course, Tomlin, came through for the most part last season, in the playoffs. So I hope at this point, unless something happens, each of them should have about two starts left after this.
Yeah.
As we close out these last week and a half now of the season. So if something happens in that, maybe Clevinger is really bad for a couple starts, that might change that equation. But
you see any signs indicating that he might be bad for a couple of starts?
As of right now, honestly, for neither of them, really.
No, no.
Tomlin's biggest problem's always been giving up the home run ball, and he's been better at that in that time period you were mentioning, July and then September. He's been better at that. So I would hope right now it's Clevinger, only because he has, as you pointed out, pitched better.
And quite frankly, he has been more dominant.
Yes.
Looking. It's an eye test thing. The stats are what the stats are, but just from the eye test thing, he looks like so confident out there at every start. He feels like he's a part of a rotation, and he has been, especially since Tomlin was out for a month. He feels like it's, hey, it's me and Cookie and Klubs and Trevor, and we're just the thing. And that four-man rotation, quite honestly, has been the thing in the American League. Again, counting the month out that Tomlin had. Now, Tomlin is the fifth starter there, to me, is just that, the fifth starter. And so, to me, just, again, being very simplistic, lop off the fifth man when you get into the playoffs and you have to go four-man rotation. You lop off the fifth guy and the top four go. If you want the fifth guy for your long man or for your, strategic bullpen, well, that's a problem Terry Francona is going to have to solve on his own. He's going to have to figure out, how many of these guys can I keep in my pen? I know I've got Miller and Allen and Shaw and Smitty are all givens. That's four. Goody, probably.
Yeah, I would think Goody, McAllister, and Otero would be the other three.
McAllister, to me, is a question mark. To me, if you want to keep Tomlin on the postseason roster in some place, in some way, McAllister might be the guy that is a question
mark. That's a good point. No, that's a good point.
And the other one, Jim, is what are they doing with Danny Salazar?
I was just going to get to that. There's spots
he's
starting.
He's not going to start, obviously, but is there a spot in the bullpen for him on a 25-man rotation?
And the
I'm sorry, 25-man roster, beg your pardon. And I don't think there is.
I agree with that last part. Between both Tomlin and Salazar, if they're not going to be part of the playoff rotation, I don't think you need – I wouldn't – honestly, I wouldn't want to keep both. You know, because they both serve that longer guy spot starter mode, and it would bump off a guy like a McAllister from that kind of roster altogether. We're gonna find out more about that tomorrow, because Salazar is going to start, and now whether he pitches only a couple innings as they sort of have alluded to the Indians, that'll tell us a few things, because they want to see if Salazar can at least be a bullpen arm. For them. But yeah, there's going to have to be some questions that have to be answered as we go through this next week. I want to get back, if I may, real quick to something you kind of mentioned. We were talking about the home run, the overall home runs hit in baseball record, and tying that to some of these guys. Yeah, when you look at a rotation or a pitching staff like the Indians, for example, it really shows how good they must be doing, because they're not as much of culprits as others have been for all the home run totals. In essence, what I'm trying to say is, anybody who's having, and this isn't brought up on the national perspective that much, it's about the home runs themselves being hit. But on the pitching side, if you're having a staff that's going out there doing things like the Indians, for example, that kind of, to me, I look at that and I think, that makes them even better than what the numbers indicate just because of all the offense.
Oh, absolutely. That's kind of the point I was trying to make before when I talked about as a staff, the best starting staff in baseball and the best bullpen in baseball, putting up some incredible numbers despite this massive home run, barrage that the entire sport, the entire both leagues have been a part of this season. And to me, that's got to be underscored. People need to really appreciate the numbers. I mean, they're fantastic on their own. But when you consider them in the context of this offensive explosion of the long ball, it's even that much better. And that much bigger and that much more impressive as part of this 25 out of 26 game run, the 22 consecutive game winning streak and everything else. Remember, they were clubbing teams. They were beating, and I don't remember what the final totals now were of the 22 gamer, Jim, but it was in the neighborhood of 140 to about 38 that they outscored teams. And they hit more home runs themselves than they allowed runs.
Yeah, that last streak. Part is what I kept getting stuck on, because that's just inconceivable.
Yeah, and so while the whole league is hitting long balls like nobody has since 2000, and that's when that's the record that they just broke yesterday as a league or as a sport, as MLB, in a single season, that was primetime steroid era, as we know. The whole Maguire-Sosa thing was the great home run race of 98. 99, 2000, 2001. Bonds did it in 2003 with 273. All of these numbers, these obscene, ridiculous numbers, during the steroid or PED era happened then, and that's happening now. And during this, not the steroid part, but the power part, the numbers part, and during this incredible record-breaking, offensive home run explosion, the Indians during that streak didn't just out-homer the other guys. The pitchers kept everybody else in the yard. They
yep.
kept everybody, quite frankly, off the bases. And just from getting, in 22 games, you allowed less than 40 runs while putting up 140. It's another thing to really kind of behold.
Yeah, and by the way, one more notation, because you're mentioning how, they lose the one game back on Friday, but now they've won three straight since, where some were wondering, are they going to, drop a couple in a row, kind of thing.
Well, that's what I feared. I figured once the streak ended, it's going to be a big exhale, and they're going to fall a little bit.
Yeah, and it happens a lot with streaks in baseball. You go on a bigger tear, and then you'll usually lose a couple in a row, it seems, after that. I'm throwing this out only in the connotation of this is how things change depending on when these happen. Here's what I'm trying to say in a twisted way. We all remember, especially Tigers fans, but we all remember around these parts, 35-5 to start 1984, right?
Right.
That gets a lot of extra pop, not just because of Tiger fans we have here in the area, but because that was to literally start the season right out the gate.
Right.
The Indians in their last 40 are 34-6. So just one game worse than that pace.
And doing it, obviously, at the right time rather than to start. Well, you can't complain about it when you talk about the Tigers, but because they carried that for the entire season.
Yeah.
But if you are going to do it at the start of a season or as you wrap up a season, I'd rather do it as you wrap up because you're playing with all the confidence in the world. You're playing at the peak of your abilities going into the postseason.
I'd rather be in the Indians.
That's assuming there isn't, as we say, a drop-off in 3 out of 4 losses in the last week or so.
Yeah, exactly. And I know they played better in recent days, but to spin it 2017 style, I'd rather be where the Indians are right now than the Dodgers. Even though they've won a couple, and kind of look like they've gotten out of the funk, I'd still rather be where the Indians are than the Dodgers at this moment.
Completely concur with that. Hey, ESPN 106.5, the ticket is ready to put $1,000 four times a day into your hands with the 4K a day contest. Listen weekdays at 9 a.m., noon, 3 p.m., and 6 p.m. for the keyword cue to call. Then text that keyword to 62582. Write it down. Save it in your phone. 62582. And you'll have a chance at $1,000 four times a day. It's the 4K a day only from Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. More information is online at 106.5theticket.com. Kush, a little stat, please.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
A lot of baseball talk to open the show, and we're going to get back to more of it in the 4 o'clock hour, but how about some football now for the Wild Stat of the Day? Yesterday we talked a lot about the Lions 2-0 start for the first time in 6 years, did it in 2011. And we also talked about how the Browns, well, they're the opposite. They can't get off to a 2-0 start. As a matter of fact, they continue to be 0-2 more times than not. Well, let's go there for the Wild Stat of the Day. The last time the Browns did what the Lions just did and start the season 2-0, it was way back to when they were 3-0 to start the season in 1993. Bernie Kosar was the starter of those 3 games for the Browns. That wouldn't last very long. Because a month and a half after that 3-0 start, in the month of November, as a matter of fact, on November 9th, that's when Bill Belichick, head coach of the Cleveland Browns, cut Bernie Kosar, ending the run of one of the most popular players in that franchise's history. Diminishing skills, they said, but there was a lot more to that story. So there you go. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. We'll get a Sports Center here coming up, and then we'll got a couple of other issues that I do want to get into football-wise. Oh, Jim, we got Sammy Hagar tickets, too. Almost forgot. We're going to give Sammy Hagar tickets away coming up within the next 20 minutes. So make sure you stay with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, and the extravaganza rolls on with a little rock from Sammy Hagar. No, that wasn't Sammy Hagar in the bumper music there. Kush, why wasn't that Sammy Hagar in the bumper music, for crying out loud? You give me Billy Idol when I'm giving away Sammy Hagar tickets.
I realized you were doing them right out of the gate.
What
caught
kind
me by
of
surprise.
Producer gives me Billy Idol bumper music on a Sammy Hagar ticket giveaway? Yeah, I do want to do this. Caller number 6 right now to 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We're going to hook you up. We got tickets to Sammy Hagar. It's Wednesday, a week from today, in fact. How about that? The 27th at the Toledo Zoo. If you would like to go see Sammy rock it out at the zoo, be caller 6 right now, 866-240-165. By the way, that's the number Matt from Toledo called, Kush. Bring him up for me as we talk a little pitching staffs as we get ready for the postseason here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey there, Matt. How are you, sir?
Hello. Yeah, when you're talking about this Cleveland staff, and I realize I'm premature in that they have not won anything yet.
Correct.
But statistically speaking, if they would win the World Series this year, I would think that they would have to be in the conversation of the most dominant pitching staff maybe in the last 40 years, along with that mid-90s staff that Atlanta had with Maddox and Glavine and Smoltz, and then the early 2000s that the Diamondbacks had with Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling. The difference being is that this Indian staff may actually be deeper in terms of actual number of starting pitchers that are maybe classified as being dominant right now.
Yeah, you're 100% right when you qualify at all by saying if they win the whole thing and if they continue this, because you're right. The team pitching stats don't do it justice. They are number one in baseball in team ERA at 3.35, and that's better by by about 0.35 more than the second team, which is Boston. Their batting average against is unbelievable at 236. I won't get into all the strikeouts and anything else. As a team, the team numbers don't do it justice. If you look at, as you say, individual dominance, looking at Kluber, who probably should be the American League Cy Young winner, looking at Carrasco, who's one of the top probably five or six starters in the American League from start to finish right now this season. Look at what Bauer has done since, I want to say, July 1st. He has been one of the best pitchers in the American League, not just on that staff. And, of course, we just detailed some of Clevinger and Tomlin's numbers in the second half. Individually, all of them have been, as you say, there's no weak link. There's no, well, we've got our bad fifth starter going today. Kind, that's how they were able to put together a streak. You got five stoppers going, in a row for this team. So yeah, I think it would be an interesting thing to do and look up full rotations of World Series champions and see what kinds of runs those starters kind of had and see how dominant they were, and maybe you would find a favorable comparison there with these guys.
It's entirely possible, Bob, that you might be able to when you look back, and it's an interesting comparison. Obviously, I'm not ready to put even a Kluber into the Hall of Fame the way that Braves rotation was, but
and with Johnson and Schilling should be, of course,
sure.
he's being blackballed, but yeah, I mean, we're not saying that, but just for as Matt said, and I don't know if Matt is still there or not.
No, we lost him.
Yeah, we lost him. I thought I heard a little click there. As Matt was saying, and we're not necessarily saying they're all Hall of Famers, but they're all being incredibly dominant right now.
Yes.
And for a single season dominant starting staff, you could say, if they were to do this, now this is all contingent upon that, so let's all pump the brakes. Nobody is saying that the Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer, Clevinger, Tomlin thing is better than the, you know, Maddox, Glavin, Smoltz, Avery thing. Nobody's saying that yet. But his point is a good one. If it were to come to all of that, there might be a reason to dig up all of the old stats from those teams, from the Braves, from the D-backs, as he talked about in 2001, kind of dig all of those up and start doing a side-by-side comparison with this group.
And possibly include others, like maybe the 1971 Orioles. That was the team under Earl Weaver, I believe, that had four 20-game winners, which is just mind-boggling to try to think about today. Either way.
You know what, Jim? You know what? That's really interesting that you say that, because this Indians team, you know, I mean, look, it's hard to win 20 games. How many 20-game winners do we see on a regular basis in baseball?
I was just reading an article the other day. I think it was on CBSSports.com, but I was just reading it the other day. The gist of it is, barring something really funky, nobody's going to have 20 wins this year, which will only be the second year that doesn't involve some kind of work stoppage where there were no 20-game winners. The other,
now,
I believe, was 2009.
Take that into consideration. Put that into context, Jim. I'm so glad you brought up those Orioles. Four 20-game winners, which is it was a different era then.
Yes.
It was a different time then. In this era where nobody's going to have 20 wins, right now you could be looking at an Indians team that has, you know, four guys with well, I guess he's not going to have time, Clevinger is, to get to 15 wins or more. I'm trying to put the whole thing together.
I'm pretty confident they're going to have five with at least 10, because Tomlin's sitting on nine with two starts to go.
That's true. Hold on, I seem to have lost my full Indians pitching stats here. Let me grab this again, because I just want to get all of their win totals here. So yeah, here we go. I've got it now. So Kluber has 17 wins. We know that he is the leader. Kluber has 17, Carrasco has 16, Bauer has 16, Clevinger has 11. He'll only have a couple of starts left, so he can't get to 15. But just even have three guys with 16-plus, Kluber's got two starts left.
Yep.
So he could finish with 19. You could have, in a day where, when I say in a day, I mean in these days, in which the home run record was just broken last night, with still roughly 2 weeks of baseball to be played, an offensive time where nobody in baseball is going to have 20 wins, you could have an Indians rotation that has 19, 18, and 18.
Yeah.
Think about that. Three starters at 18 plus. Bauer and Carrasco have at least two starts left, and that would be, you know, like I said, if they win them both, they would give them each 18, and Kluber could get to 20. To 19. Clevinger could get to 13, and Tomlin could get to 11. So you could have five starters with double-digit wins. You're exactly right, Jim, and three of them would be at 18 or more. That, to me, I don't want to, you know, who am I? I'm not Elias Sports Bureau, and there's no way to quantify this. This is pure opinion, mm-hmm. especially mixed in with bias because we're talking about my favorite team. But three pitchers with 18 wins or more in 2017 would rival the Orioles' four pitchers with 20. From what year was that?
1971 was 71. That one. Or was it 70?
73, I thought.
It was the early 70s. Yeah, it's okay. Now you're going to make me look up what year just for curiosity.
It's okay. You don't have to. But you understand the point.
Yes.
We're talking about a modern-day type of equivalency to that.
Okay.
Or at least very damn close to it. And by the way, Kluber would have 20 if he didn't miss three starts because he was injured in the middle of the season, and he only got 27 starts.
I believe that was brought up in the article I referred to.
Yeah. And by the way, since we're doing this, boy, I'll tell you what, I didn't mean to make this all baseball in the first hour because I'm going to talk baseball with our guest Chris Cotillo coming up at 4:10. So I really wanted to talk about some football things and some basketball things too, believe it or not, with the Kevin Durant story being as bizarre as it is. But since we're here and we're talking about, you know, Kluber, and we're talking about this rotation being one of the best, perhaps if they go on to win the World Series, et cetera, let me just throw another little interesting analysis that I saw out there. Corey Kluber, about a month ago, was clearly going to finish second to Chris Sale in the American League Cy Young Award. The month that he just had the Player of the Week, he just won the Player of the Week Award last week, by the way. He was the Player of the Month prior to that in August. He has been just as dominant here in September, and most people would agree he has passed Chris Sale for the American League Cy Young right now. Here is a very interesting question raised by Ken Rosenthal over at Fox. Is the Cy Young Award enough for Corey Kluber?
I'll tell you something that still sticks in my craw. Justin Verlander's MVP in 2011. Don't get me wrong, Verlander had a great season, finishing with a 2.40 ERA in 251 innings. But in my view, when a starting pitcher wins MVP, his season had better be historic. Which brings me to Corey Kluber. The Cy Young no longer is in question. Kluber's ERA is more than a half run per nine innings better than Chris Sale's. So, what about Kluber for MVP? He leads all players, hitters included, in Baseball Reference's version of wins above replacement, and is also third in Fangraph's version. Sale actually is first. Kluber's park-adjusted ERA, meanwhile, is higher than Verlander's was in 2011, and his strikeout and walk rates are better. Granted, Verlander threw a significantly higher number of innings. But my point is, if voters gave the award to such a starting pitcher once, we need to consider every starting pitcher going forward at a similar level. But you don't hear the MVP talk for Kluber that you did for Verlander, in part because the position player competition this season is tougher. I voted for Jacoby Ellsbury in 2011. Generally speaking, I prefer a position player who grinds it out every day. What drives me nuts is the inconsistency in our overall voting patterns. You watch. Corey Kluber will be another example.
So that's Ken Rosenthal over at Fox Sports, and I got to tell you, Kush, he makes some very, very valid points. Not about, it sticks in his craw that Verlander won the MVP. You know, and that's in large part, as he said, because he just will always kind of side with a position player. My hand is in the air, because I am too. I will almost always side with a guy, as he describes it, who goes out there every night and guts and grits his way into the lineup and through the lineup and doesn't do it every 5 days. Now, it's not the starting pitcher's fault. It's just the nature of the beast, okay? But I agree. You should be a 162-game player, for the most part, to win the MVP. The Cy Young is for the guy who comes out every 5 days, or for the closer, perhaps, who comes out every, you know, couple. So that's how I feel about it. But
okay,
since Verlander did it, and Verlander, by the way, was a very, very worthy winner that year because I think he said it also, did Rosenthal, that there weren't as many great position players having great seasons that year to really, you know, take that from him. He voted for Ellsbury, and I thought Ellsbury was a dubious candidate at best. This year there are more candidates, more position players that you could probably point to say this guy should be the MVP than Kluber. But his point is a valid one. If we did it for Verlander in, what was it, 11?
2011.
If we did it for Verlander in 11, then you got to start looking at all of the stats for the best pitcher every year and say, is he also the MVP candidate in addition to the Cy Young? And Kluber's stats compare favorably, other than innings pitched, again, three fewer starts, obviously a lot fewer innings because of the injury. His stats compare very favorably with Justin Verlander's in that dual MVP and Cy Young season in 2011. And I think that's a really interesting thing to think about.
No, it absolutely is. The other part that caught my ear, because I love this kind of debate too, because, you know, some people say, no, I'd never put a pitcher at all. I wouldn't even give him a vote if he deserves it because that's what the Cy Young is for.
Right.
The other part that caught my ear of what you played back from Ken Rosenthal just now was he also said you have to do something historic in that year. And for that context, in addition to obviously having some dubious candidates on the position player side, it almost is as if you have to have both of those things happening at the same time. In terms of historical nature of Verlander's season, he did win the pitcher's triple crown that year, 24 wins, 240 ERA, struck out 250.
That's big.
So those
triple crown
led
is big.
The league.
Yes, sir.
Incidentally, just out of sheer curiosity, because I have Verlander's 2011 up, he also led the league in winning percentage, game started, innings pitched with 251, which that's the type of number you never see anymore.
Not anymore. No,
ERA
you're right.
Plus,
not anymore. Not in the world of pitch counts.
Yes,
in the age of pitch counts,
exactly.
You don't get to that many innings most of the
he
time.
He also led an ERA plus, WHIP, and hits per nine innings at its low in the low end. Obviously, only allowing 6.2. So by my count, that's 4 or 5. He led in 9 different pitching categories, led the league, including the 3 that comprised the quote-unquote pitcher's triple crown.
See, and that's the reason why, unlike Rosenthal, it doesn't stick in my craw. I generally speaking, don't like the idea, as we said, of pitchers being able to win that award. That should be for an everyday player. But given the circumstances of not a ton of great position player candidates and the numbers you just cited, particularly the triple crown, the pitcher's triple crown, I was okay with it. I really was. You know, and again, being a staunch diehard Indians fan, I was doing Indians postgame shows at the time, so I was not happy that a Tiger just did this, you know.
And right.
But I had to grudgingly accept the fact that, Jesus criminy, he was that good. You know, the thing that I would cling to if I wanted to still say I was bitter, like Rosenthal said, it sticks in his craw. And to be clear, this is just for the sake of argument, because I'm not bitter about it.
Right.
My argument about pitchers would still come into play. A great position player in the middle of a batting lineup has to be accounted for every single day by the opposing manager and by the opposing pitcher. Like, for example, let's stay with the Tigers. When Miggy won the batting triple crown, every day the opposing pitcher and the opposing manager have to strategize, how are we going to pitch this guy? If there's somebody on, if there isn't anybody on, if there's one out, if there's two outs, et cetera, because he will kill us. Every day he impacts 162, or if he gets a break here and there, say 154, 5, 6 games.
Mm-hmm.
He's impacting the outcome of that game, whereas Justin is impacting only the outcome of about 33 games out of 162,
right?
Because those that would be, you know, roughly a full season of starting. Now, you could, and I don't want to get off into the weeds here, but you could say, well, a great dominant starting pitcher, when an opposing manager knows who's coming up or that he's coming up in this series, he might have to shuffle his rotation. He might give guys a day off at a certain time because he wants them to be able to face this guy, or he doesn't want them to face that guy, so he shuffles his lineup. And so maybe it does affect other games not started by that pitcher. But it's a reach. To me, that's
yeah.
A stretch to say, you know, how they're positioning their own rotation based on this dominant guy coming up.
But
in terms of just his playing
yeah.
and performance, an MVP should impact 162 games or so, not just 33, 34 starts.
And what's funny and twisted about bringing these couple things up is I kind of agree with that sentiment, you know, unless something really interesting. Like I said, to me, it has to be a convergence of both pitcher having a historical year plus dubious candidates out of the position players.
Yeah,
it's weird. That one, Verlander, doesn't stick in my craw, yet a vote for an MVP the very next year in the American League, which they got right, still sticks in my craw, because I'm not a Tigers fan, guys. I am still mad that it was even a debate in 2012, honestly,
the advanced metric guys did the Trout thing. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't care. And I like some of the advanced metrics things. But the dude won the first triple crown in Major League Baseball since the 1960s. That's end of discussion to me. They got that vote right. That's the one that sticks in my craw, even though they got it right.
Could not agree more. Once that thing, I'm sitting there. And by the way, people should know this. Out Cleveland way, Miggy isn't very highly thought of.
Because outside of this year, he torches the Indians all the time.
Not just because of his dominance of them, but his attitude against them. You know, he is not, you know, like our friend Dennis, he cannot stand Miguel Cabrera.
Right, okay.
He doesn't like his attitude. He doesn't like his mouth. He doesn't like, you saw how he was barking at the fans in his last trip there.
That's right. I forgot about that.
He is not well liked in Cleveland. So I can tell you that. Having said that, as a Cleveland fan, even I said the same thing. Dude won the Triple Crown. This debate is over. Miguel Cabrera is the MVP. Stop talking. Stop telling me about this saber metric or that advanced analytic. Bullcrap. Miggy's the MVP. He's the Triple Crown winner. Game over. So even those people who didn't like Miggy very much were admitting, dude, that just is what it is. It's just that dominant. All right. Here's what we got. We got a quick timeout for the top of the hour Sports Center. On the other side of that, we are going to talk to Chris Cotillo, MLBDailyDish.com, about more baseball stuff. Looks like we're going to go baseball heavy today, even though that wasn't the plan. It's okay. We can adjust. We're also going to have the next qualifier for our European flyaway. That's right. We've got a ticket European vacation for you. It's a grand prize you can qualify for coming up a little bit later on in the next half hour. So keep listening for your cue to call, and we'll set you up with that opportunity as we continue. And then UT head coach Jason Candle talks about the Rockets' wild win, over 100 points scored in the win over Tulsa at the Glass Bowl on Saturday. And now the strong winds that blow them down to Coral Gables as they take on the Canes of the U coming up on Saturday. So Coach Campbell talks to us coming up also in the next hour right here on the Ticket.
Mike Clevenger, 26-year-old, slated to make his 21st start.
High fastball, threw it by him. Oh, strike three called. Gene Bruce drives one high in the air, deep center field. Trout racing back. He's out of room. It is off the wall. Around third scoring is Encarnacion. And Jay Bruce doubles in the game's first run. And listen to those Indians fans. The 1-0 pitch drilled. Deep right center. That's in the alley. That is gone. A home run for Roberto Perez. Runners will be off on a 3-2 pitch. Line drive to the base hit into left field. Lindor scores. Jackson right on his heels. He'll cross home plate as well. A two-out, two-run single for Edwin Encarnacion. And it's a three-run ninth for Cleveland. Line drive center field. Greg Allen breaks hard. He comes in, dies. Oh, what a sensational catch to end the game. 6-3, Indians a winner.
Whoever plays, there's one way to play. Then you don't have to worry about going into the playoffs and flicking a button on. You know, you can't do that if you just play the game the right way. Then you get to the playoffs, and you're either good enough or you're not. It's not going to be because, well, we slowed down, we eased in. It's just a better way to go about it. All things said, I'd rather be able to set up your pitching. That's why staying out of that wild card game is so important. It doesn't mean you can't win, but you're going to be facing a team that you're not going to see the number one. It's an advantage to be able to set up your pitching.
Hit the home run, and Swanee kind of told me when I came back in the dugout and let me know. And, you know, pretty cool thing to be a part of. I didn't hit many this year, but I guess I made one count. It's good to be in the Hall of Fame, I guess.
The whole bar has completely shifted. And I don't know that it's good or bad. It's just different. I know a lot of people argue it's bad because we have more homers, more strikeouts, more walks, so fewer balls in play, less base running, less action. But for better or for worse, this is the game we've got. And I just look at it and say, all right, this is our environment. And then we could break it again next year. And I'm going to have to make a lot of adjustments, I think, to how I look at players as prospects because of what I said earlier and the data you just gave, which is that average power means something very different today than it did even 3 or 4 years ago.
I think there's three things to look at this year that there's a reason why so many guys are hitting home runs now. First of all, guys are just bigger and stronger. You know, they're working out harder. They're working out younger. You have kids in high school hitting the ball 500 feet. So guys are just stronger nowadays. Number two, with the advent of the shift, players don't try to slap the ball around anymore. They've realized that if you get the ball in the air, you have a better chance of getting on base, you have a better chance of doing damage, and there's not a lot of singles out there on the infield, so guys are trying to hit the ball in the air. And then the third thing, the ball's reduced this year. I just talked to guys throughout baseball. Pitchers are saying it, hitters are saying it. You know, you pick up the ball, it just feels different. I know MLB is going to tell you, no, there's nothing wrong, but when you see guys hitting balls on their front foot into the third deck 500 feet, it just doesn't happen like that every year. And so you got to think the baseballs are a little bit harder this year.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
So drastic. Judge to right. That one well struck. If it's fair, it's got a chance, and it's fair and gone. Number 45 for Aaron Judge, and just like that, the Yankees within a run. There's Matt Olson. That one ripped to center, way back there, gone! Back to back. And the Yankees' young stars have powered them right back into this game.
It is all about the long ball. Aaron Judge's 45th puts him four shy of Mark McGwire's single-season rookie record set way back when I was a freshman in college in 1987. I think he's probably going to get that over the course of the next 10, 12 days that there are left in the baseball season. It's all about the long ball. Joining us now to talk all things baseball is our friend from MLB Daily Dish, not ML Bailey, MLBDailyDish.com. Chris Cotillo joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm good. Good to have you back. Thanks for spending a little bit of time. What do you think about Mark Teixeira there at the end of that little montage of highlights that we had? Text saying the balls are flat out juiced. Baseball will deny it, but he said he's talked to a number of guys, and obviously he's got the connections in the game, who say that the ball feels different. Pitchers and hitters agree. Do you agree?
Yeah, you know, obviously I'm not a player. I've been out there, so I don't really know. I think a lot of players kind of do subscribe to that theory, but baseball has denied it, so it's up to if you want to take baseball, you know, at its word. I think obviously home runs have been a major storyline all season. A lot of people for them, a lot of people against them. There's a lot of things that I've really gone into this. So, I think, like I said before, I think there's a lot of factors. Just guys are throwing the ball 100 miles an hour. If you make not as solid contact, you can still get it out. It's based on exit velocity. And plus, the conditioning has really gone up. Guys are bigger than ever. They're stronger than ever. And that makes sense, too. There's some ballparks that are, you know, whether it be Yankee Stadium or Camden Yards, Texas, some of these parks that are really big home run parks that have been built for that, you know, in the last 20 years or so. It's there's a lot of factors. Major League Baseball will have to really look at the balls and look at the equipment this off season and see if there's something is there, because if the players are saying it that much, you know, it's going to be it's something that should be investigated.
Is it a problem? You know, should we be worried at all? Should we not like the fact that home runs are being hit at such a crazy rate, or is it completely overly, you know, dramatized that this is such a big deal?
You know, I think it's just a lot of purists don't like it. You know, I think there's just this natural inclination saying, oh no, we're seeing all these home runs. There's a problem with this, because last time we saw this and it was really cool in the late 90s, it was the steroid era, you know, and there's just that lack of trust that I think people have inherently when it comes to home run hitting that, you know, makes people worry, or just has a negative subconscious effect on them that maybe it shouldn't. You know, every kid, when they're playing a video game growing up, or they're in the backyard, they're not trying to hit singles like they probably should be. They're trying to hit bombs, and you're seeing guys do that now. And Aaron Judge, Carlos Stanton, all these guys are hitting so many. You know, it's really a new era for the game. The pitchers, as I said, pitching harder than ever, but it really makes you realize how much better the great pitchers are because they can get these guys out. And, you know, every other inning or so, we're seeing a home run. So it's, I don't know. I don't think it's the worst the worst thing ever, but I do understand that people are hesitant just because of how steroids went.
Yeah, we're talking to Chris Cotilla, MLBDailyDish.com, joining us here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, talking all things baseball. I do not believe that we spoke, Chris, during the streak, which is now, you know, not a streak anymore, but it's still an incredible run. It was 22 in a row for the Cleveland Indians, as we know, an American League record. Had they not tripped and stumbled Friday against the Royals, last night would have been the tying win, 26 in a row with the 1916 Giants. Tonight would be looking for 27, but as it stands, they have won 25 out of their last 26 games. Even the loss didn't deter them. They came back and won Saturday, Sunday, and then again yesterday in the first game of a West Coast trip. Just give me your impressions and the historic nature of what you saw, and do you subscribe after that, Chris, to the peaking too soon theory? Is there a problem with them doing what they have done, considering they'll never be able to replicate it, of course, as you get into the postseason?
No, for me, you know, I like a team getting hot in September. You know, that's how you'd rather be hot in September than hot in April and cold in September. So we're seeing a team in the Indians becoming, you know, if not just the favorite in the American League, but also the favorite in all of Major League Baseball. That coincided with the Dodgers slide, obviously. To have the anything could happen in October caveat, but it is historic. It's a crazy streak. What we've seen from those guys, you know, and different contributors, different ways of winning ball games every night was fantastic. You know, you can talk about during the streak going up against the Tigers and the White Sox for a lot of it. Even Kansas City, Baltimore, some of these clubs weren't the strongest, but you know, you go out and you win the games you're supposed to, and that's how you become, you know, one of the number one, you become maybe the number one seed in the American League at the end of the season. So, you know, you 25 out of 26, as you mentioned, is extremely impressive. And I'm always happy with a team that's peaking in late September. A lot of questions I've gotten recently said we'd be worried about the Dodgers because they've been sliding. You don't want to see your team back in like that, even as historic as their year has been. I'd rather have a team get hot now and stay hot once it really matters.
Yeah, I would certainly agree. I would rather be hot in September than hot early. We were talking about that here, of course, because in Northwest Ohio, we look up at the Tigers, and you know, it was 1984 when they started 35-5. Jim Cushman just pointed out that the Indians over the last 40 games are 34-6. I'd rather do that in August and September than in April and May. Certainly. Now to the other part of the question, though, are they? Well, it's kind of an add-on. Are they not just the hottest team peaking in September, but are they the best team in the American League? Are they and should they be not just the top seed, because they are probably going to have that over the Astros, but are they, should they be the favorite to go back to the World Series for a second straight year?
You know, I think experience is obviously important. They got there last year. They were so close. And I think, you know, I spoke to Andrew Miller at the All-Star game, and he went here to UNC and was wearing UNC shorts. And I commented, I was like, hey, Andrew, I like your shorts. And I go there. He said, yeah, well, that's what we're trying to do this year. We're trying to follow the UNC model of getting to the championship game, which they literally did in Game 7 one year, lose it heartbreakingly and come back and win the next one. So, you know, his alma mater is able to do it, and that's their entire goal. Anything short of that will be a failure in the eyes of the Indians. I think, you know, you're seeing them, like we said, gotten really hot, and what you're looking at, you know, them and the Astros probably are the favorites. The Red Sox at times have looked like they could be as well, with Chris Sale and Drew Pomeranz. And if David Price is an effective reliever, you know, he hasn't ever been effective in the postseason, but if he's an effective reliever, that's just a new element that team can add. Great lineup, really some sparks from some young guys and attendee Devers. So, you know, I think it really is a three-horse race in the AL. I think it's all comes down to, you know, who's playing well in a five-game series at the beginning of October. That's a really short series for teams to, you know, be able to make a run, but anything can happen once we get there. We saw that, you know, a lot of people expected the Red Sox to win that series against Cleveland last year. Cleveland sweeps them and goes on that run to Game 7. So, you know, if I had to handicap it now, probably Cleveland won, but not by a lot, just because it's so close and there's so many talented pitchers, especially on all three clubs.
Looking at the National League, you mentioned the Dodgers. You certainly don't want to be quote-unquote backing in. Not that they're backing in. They certainly won't, but they're not going to be playing their best unless something crazy happens over the next 10 days. Are they still the team to beat in the National League? Or do you give the Nationals, if Bryce Harper comes back, a fighting chance? Or is it the defending champion Cubs, who have the worst record among the three division leaders in the NL, but they are still the Cubs and the defending champions? You mentioned experience carrying you a long way when you talked about the Indians. Does that same thing apply to Chicago?
Yeah, and the Cubs have now won 7 in a row. And I also, you throw, you know, those three teams up, but a lot of people are hopping on the Diamondbacks bandwagon and saying,
yeah,
you know, this team has a good chance once we get to October as well. So I think
we're almost,
you know,
as
that's
as
open.
The Indians for part of that streak.
Right, right. And I think, you know, that's things have opened up in the NL, you know, more too, just because the Dodgers went on that slide. I really do like the National Scherzer, Strasburg, and Gio Gonzalez is a great top three. They did a lot to improve that bullpen in July. The lineup is absolutely stacked. Harper, Murphy, Rendon is an MVP candidate. You know, the big caveat there obviously is if Harper comes back and he's completely healthy. So I think, you know, there are really four teams in the National League that could win it. There's really seven teams to me. You know, I don't want to hate on the Yankees too much, not just because I'm a Boston guy, but I just see the Red Sox and the Astros and the Indians being a tick above them. Records would indicate that, but we'll see when we get into October. I think, you know, the Dodgers were the clear favorite heading in about a month ago, and now things have evened out a little bit. That's just a regression to the mean that you can pretty much expect at any point during the season, but you really don't like them to be playing, you know, their worst baseball of the year in September, just like we just talked about the Indians. You want them playing their best. So it's a little bit more wide open than now, right now, and obviously, you know, that wild card race still going on, Colorado, Milwaukee, someone could sneak in and make some noise as well.
We're talking to Chris Cotillo, MLBDailyDish.com. I want to talk to you about awards in a second here, but not until I tell our listeners about the chance that they have to fly out to one of six European destinations from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina. That's right. It's qualifying time. Be the fifth caller right now to 866-240-1065. And you try that again each and every weekday afternoon, or you can register one time online at 1065theticket.com, and you will be in the grand prize drawing for a European vacation from the ticket from Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and ESPN 1065 The Ticket. Good luck to you. Chris, let's talk about the awards, and I'm going to stay in the American League because that's we're kind of an American League city here in Toledo as we look at the Tigers and the Indians. So is the American League MVP sewn up for Jose Altuve, or is there a chance that, you know, a guy like Jose Ramirez of the Indians has a chance at it?
I think Altuve is the clear favorite, you know, and things could change here in the next couple of weeks. Ramirez is, has been extremely impressive, especially with his career arc and the way he's gone. But I think, yeah, Altuve is the clear favorite. It was Judge at the All-Star break. Judge had a rough second half. Altuve's only gotten better, and it looks like he is in the driver's seat there if you had to pick a guy right now.
What about Mike Trout? Does he still have a chance? Because the Angels are still kind of hanging in there. They're, what, I think a game and a half back of the second wild card spot for a spot in that game.
Yeah, I think he's always in the mix just based on the fact he's Mike Trout. But, you know, missing 2 months of the season like he did obviously hurts. Altuve has been in there and been extremely productive all year for a team that is in first place, a clear league leader, you know, batting almost .350. So I think Altuve is the favorite, though Trout, you know, it's always tough to count out a guy like that.
Chris Sale, and I know you're a Boston guy, Chris Sale had the best start to the season and has been more consistent because he hasn't missed any starts. Corey Kluber was on the DL for a while, missed three starts at least. He's only had 27 starts, but my goodness, particularly since he came back off the DL on July 1st, he's been the very best pitcher in baseball. His ERA is a half run better than Sale's right now at 2.86 to 2.35. Who gets the Cy Young Award in the American League?
That's really tough. I think it's a very close call. You know, it was at a point where there's no way Sale was losing it as of a few weeks ago, and now Kluber in the run he's been on, just with what the Indians have done, really make a lot of people vote Kluber. I think right now Kluber probably does have the slight edge, but these guys have a couple more starts, and I'm sure that will impact things as we go on. Kluber leads the league in ERA, leads the league in, and I believe wins as well. So I think, you know, it's really tough for you to say Sale when you have those two things going in your favor and on a better team. Kluber's obviously on the better team with a better record as of right now. So I'd have to give Kluber the edge. That's not just me pandering to your audience as a Bostonian.
No, not at all. I want the honest answer because, you know, I mean, I'll be honest with you, too. I think it probably helped Kluber's case that the last time the Indians faced Chris Sale, they battered him. And I don't mm-hmm. even get out of the third, I think it was. So, you know, you're kind of beating up on the guy that your ace is fighting for the Cy Young Award, and that added a little bit to his ERA at that particular point in time. So I don't know if voters hold on to those things or not, but that's, you know, those kind of showdown games sometimes make an impact. I just want to ask about a couple of other quick ones. And again, this is kind of pandering to our audience a little bit here because we got a lot of Indians fans. Mm-hmm. When it comes to most improved player, Can Trevor Bauer, is there anybody that's been better than Trevor Bauer after last season, particularly the way last season ended for him with the whole drone thing and the cut finger and bleeding in the playoffs, et cetera? His numbers in the last 2 months have rivaled Kluber's, believe it or not. His ERA was around 2.5 for around the last 8 weeks of the season. I kind of feel like if there is a most improved player, it's hard to look past Trevor Bauer, who's got 16 wins and could very well finish with 18.
He's definitely in the mix, you know, and I think you're looking at him, and I think another guy to throw into that would be just Jose Ramirez, like we talked about. You know, he's a guy that not a lot of people know about. He was, you know, got MVP votes a year ago. And just seen, you know, all his numbers across the board really increase to a point where he's now an MVP candidate on a great team and has come up in some big, big moments for them. So I think he's in the mix with Bauer. You know, he's a very, very interesting guy. Gets a lot on Twitter, gets into fights with fans on Twitter, and is a very unique, kind of polarizing figure. And that drone thing was, you know, it became a meme almost. It became, you know, him being made fun of, and just kind of an embarrassing incident that he thought he could pitch with, like, the grossest cut I've ever seen in my life on his hand. So for him to come out and really prove people wrong in the second half of the year has been impressive. But, you know, the body of work over the entire season might not be there. It's a tough call, and that's obviously not the most popular award, but I think both of those guys will be talked about for sure.
Good stuff. I think we'll have to stop there. Maybe next time we chat, we'll talk about the NL side. But like I said, we're kind of an American League town here in Toledo. So Chris Cotillo, MLB's Daily Dish, MLBDailyDish.com is where you'll find his great work there. Chris, thanks for the thoughts this afternoon. We certainly appreciate it.
Yep, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, you got it. All right, I want to say this. Congratulations to Ken Wines of Sylvania. He is our most recent qualifier for the European flyaway vacation. What a tremendous contest. It goes through the first week of October. Last chance to qualify will be on October 6th at 11:59 p.m. That's when the contest will end. We'll draw after that. So make sure that you either qualify by way of calling in when you hear the cue to call in the 4 o'clock hour, right around 4:20 every day, or that you can register one time at 1065theticket.com. Also, we gave away Sammy Hagar tickets, and Jim, I seem to have lost his name. Who won our Sammy Hagar tickets?
Oh, geez, I already typed it in. I already took the prize.
And you already erased it from my screen. So
sorry.
All right, so congratulations to our winner there. You know who you are, even if nobody else does. Okay, speaking of winners, nobody's been winning more. You can say some people have won as much, but nobody has been winning more than the University of Toledo, undefeated to start the season. The most recent win, a thriller over Tulsa at the Glass Bowl Saturday, 54-51. What an amazing finish to that. Now the road gets a little tougher, in part because, well, they're on the road. Technically, they're in the air. They got to fly down to Coral Gables, Florida, for a matchup with 14th-ranked Miami. That's right, the Rockets against the U. On Saturday, Coach Jason Candle is going to talk about the last big win and that challenge ahead when he joins Kush, coming right up as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here. Time to continue our weekly college football segments. As you know, we talk every college team around the area, Ohio State, Michigan, Bowling Green, and, of course, the University of Toledo, who are now 3-0 are the Rockets after a thrilling 54-51 win back on Saturday against Tulsa. And, of course, upcoming is their interesting showdown down in Miami against the 14th-ranked Hurricanes this Saturday. And to help us break all of that down and more, we welcome back to the program the head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, joining us. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing great, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, too, myself, Coach. What a game back on Saturday, 54-51. You guys get the win. Logan Woodside ties the school record with 6 touchdowns. It was a comeback that also involved the last-second field goal to get the win. Just tell me, especially, and the last thing that I think of is you had a game like this a year ago at BYU that you came on the short end of, this time getting the win in one of these high-scoring back-and-forth type games. Just walk me through how satisfying this one is.
Yeah, I would point back to last year, honestly. It's about that time of year where we were out there and fought to the finish and just didn't finish it the way we wanted to finish it. But this year we were able to capitalize on a couple you know, mistakes at the end of the game by Tulsa, a couple penalties in that last drive, and, you know, certainly put together a great drive by our offense to go down and hold the ball for the last, you know, almost 3 minutes there and run the clock all the way down, you know, and then for Jameson to come in and kick the game-winning field goal, I thought that was a huge boost for, you know, not only him but our football team. And you know, I would point to just a tremendous crowd in the Glass Bowl, a night where we celebrate 100 years of, you know, of our history, of our program, and honored a lot of the great, you know, players and past coaches that have been a part of this thing to build it into what it is today. And, you know, I just, you know, really humbled to be in the, have the opportunity to be the head coach here, and certainly to be part of something that's, you know, such a proud tradition and such a great city. And for our team to put on a show like that and to finish the game off at the right way, I thought, was an excellent, you know, a mark on our belt for, you know, what the future looks like here. And certainly, you know, on a night where things didn't go great all the time and weren't exactly perfect, you know, we had a bunch of penalties, we had some mistakes that got us down 28-7 in the football game, and, you know, to be able to come back from all that and to handle adversity and, you know, just to keep punching and to keep fighting and then to get the win is certainly, you know, great night in the Glass Bowl.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Anyone who was there certainly got their money's worth of then sub when you talk about this game. You just mentioned it kind of at the end there, and that's kind of where I was going to start for this one, because it took a comeback in a couple of phases in this one, Coach. The first being, as you mentioned, at one point, 28-7, 21-7 after a quarter. What are your guys thinking at this point? Because that's a pretty big deficit no matter where you are in the football game.
Yeah, you can't, just like in life, you can't change the circumstances that what you're in. And you got yourself there, you know, now you got to get yourself out of it. You know, and you can sit around and worry about the whatever just happened to you. And, you know, I think that's a great lesson for our kids moving forward in their lives. You know, these guys are all striving to be great husbands and fathers one day, and certainly, you know, life's not always perfect, and it doesn't go how you script it. But you know, it's about the response. It's about getting up and to keep fighting and to keep going. And, you know, I think our guys really, you know, it's one thing to say that stuff a lot, and it's another thing to truly believe in it. But when you get down like that, you're tested. You know, you have to rally around each other and keep fighting and grab a hand and lock arms and pull together through and just stay together and play the next 30 minutes. Because, you know, at halftime, getting that last score and the last drive of the second quarter, knowing we were getting the football to start the third quarter, I didn't really sense any panic in our locker room. I didn't sense any finger-pointing or blaming of anybody. And, you know, one thing we talk about a lot in our program is you can't use your circumstances as an excuse to what you or how you react or what your attitude towards this thing is. So I give our kids a lot of credit. They've bought into that, and they certainly, you know, played the next 30 minutes, you know, with their hair on fire, and we needed it to get a win.
Absolutely, Coach. We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets, 54-51 win over Tulsa to stay unbeaten at 3-0 overall on the year this past Saturday. And walk me through that drive right before halftime. You guys are down 28-7. You kind of alluded to the mindset of your players at that point, and even getting the football back to start the third quarter, that's still a 95-yard drive that you had to go on to get that particular touchdown to bring it back to a two-score game. Walk me through a little bit of that particular drive, because obviously that's still a very big moment in the game. You're able to cut that lead to just two scores going into the locker room.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, what the stat sheet doesn't show is we had to gain a lot of those yards twice. You know, we start the ball on the 5-yard line, we get it out of there, make a couple really good plays. We have two plays called back because of penalties, and you know, we were well across the 50-yard line. The ball gets brought back, and you know, to go back and to still take those punches, even in that drive, to go down and to get a score. And you know, you saw Terry Swanson a lot in that drive. You saw John Vay Johnson a lot in that drive. You saw Cody Thompson catch the touchdown. You saw Logan Woodside make a couple really good throws. So you're relying on the veteran players, and you know, when things get really hard, you want your veteran guys to be at their best, and those guys certainly were.
Absolutely. We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here, and talk to me about some of those veteran players, maybe, because the stats just jump out of you. Swanson, 19 carries, buck 39, and a touchdown. Cody Thompson, 9 catches, 178 yards, 3 touchdowns, the first of his 3 being that one right before half. And then again, Logan Woodside tying Bruce Gronkowski's single-game Rocket record with 6 touchdown passes and 458 yards through the air. So they came to play, and they were able to put up these numbers, especially when you guys needed them going down early like that.
Yeah, and you rely on things get tough, and you rely on your senior leadership. You rely on guys that have been in that situation before. You know, those guys on that offense, you know, like I said, you rewinded back a year ago at BYU. You know, they took all the punches that night, and just, you know, it didn't work out for us at the very end. And regardless of whether we win this game this year on a last-second field goal or we don't win it, I still think which can't be lost, and you got to give those veteran guys a lot of credit because they just keep fighting and they don't. There's a never-die mentality there, and if our football team can maintain that through the entire year here, we're going to have a lot of success.
Now, you guys obviously had some success, especially offensively, in that second half, eventually taking the 51-44 lead after two straight touchdown drives in the fourth quarter after Tulsa went back up 44-36. But then Tulsa gets the ball back, their final offensive possession ending in an 81-yard drive that reties the game. Walk me through that particular drive from the defensive side of things.
Yeah, that's a methodical, you know, that's a good rushing attack we just played. You know, they gained a bunch of yards rushing against us, and some, you know, that we gave them, but a lot of that was tough, hard-earned yardage. You know, their first drive of the game was an 18-play drive. You know, and when you have 18 plays, you know, I don't know if I got enough patience to sit in there and call 18 straight plays, not alone to go to execute them and to go right down the field like that. So, you know, when you're picking up third downs and fourth downs and third and fourth and short, you know, and you're keeping, you know, to keep it moving, it's not like somebody's just totally blowing an assignment or a coach is making a bad calls. This is a heavyweight fight here where those are tough, you know, yards to be earned. So that's a really good rushing attack on offense. And you know, in that last drive, we're up into the higher 80s of snaps on defense on the field. I think we finished with 96 snaps on defense. And anytime the offense snaps the ball that many times, you're going to give up some yardage. That's just the way it is, you know. So I think, you know, we got to get them stopped in that situation, you know. But give Tulsa a lot of credit. They went down and made it really hard on us, and they got the score to tie it up. You know, and I think our guys that, you know, leaving our guys, defensive guys, leaving the field there after that touchdown, a lot of them guys are on the kickoff return unit, and I didn't sense any panic mode there even then. I felt like, hey, you know, we're going to get our blocks here. We're going to get a good return, and, you know, we're going to go out and we're going to watch this offense go down and finish this game off, and that's exactly what they were able to do.
Is some of Tulsa's rushing attack that they were able to do in this game, is this just a product of it's one of those games? I mean, this is a high-scoring type affair, but they did rush it 68 times as a team for 423 total yards. Is that something you worry about going forward at all?
Well, anytime you give up 400 yards rushing, you worry. I mean, that's something that you know, you definitely you have to have an answer for. You have to get fixed. That's a goal for us. That's a, you know, create turnovers and stop the run. Those are major points of emphasis here in our football program. So, you know, you're not going to win games in late October and early November when you want to be playing for what you said you want to be playing for if you can't stop the run and you can't make the other team or force the other team to turn the football over to you. And then you flip it to the offensive side. It's the same thing. If you can't run the ball when the weather gets bad and you can't, you know, effectively maintain the football and take care of it, you're going to have a real problem when things get really hard. And as we know, the MAC West is not a cakewalk to get through. So, you know, we got big goals here, and we got, you know, some lofty expectations put upon us, which we're not hiding from. And to get to where we want to go, we have to be better down the stretch here.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on this edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here. One more question on this game before we shift gears to coming up next this weekend. When you get a win like this, with everything that's involved in that kind of a game that we saw at the Glass Bowl this past Saturday, is there things that your players, your guys, take away from that to keep up a confidence level? Is this one of those kind of games that, yeah, the X, Y, and Z may have not gone our way, but we were still able to find a way to get that W? Is that something your players could definitely take, stash in the back of their heads, and go forward with that type of confidence?
Well, I think it validates what we preach. You know, it validates, you know, that mentality to never get up, give up, and to keep fighting, and to, you know, play through the whistle and play to the final bell. And that, you know, that it proves that when you're able to do that and stay mentally tough through the whole thing, no matter what happens and no matter what the circumstances are, you know, are, you just got to keep responding. And I think that validates that. But, you know, whether you win or whether you lose, there's always things throughout the course of a football game that a coach is going to pick off the videotape and put his spin on it and, you know, present to the team of what things need to look like moving forward. And, you know, you're playing a 12-game schedule that's just a series of tests and a series of check marks that you've got to check the boxes, and you hope that they all come out as wins. But as you prepare for each one of these games, sometimes you got to plan, and sometimes your plan doesn't work, and you got to respond, and you got to be able to figure it out and move forward. And you know, and sometimes throughout the course of that game Saturday night, our plan, you know, didn't work. But I think what give our staff a lot of credit for, they did a great job adjusting. I thought players handled that communication really well and moved forward. So anytime you can get a win like that at the, you know, and come out and overcome some adversity, I think there's a lot of growth there. I think there's some confidence to be built. And certainly, you know, you take the good and you press forward, and you certainly got to you got to rule with the handle the bad and the negative that went on and get it fixed.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza, and all those things along with mental toughness and a few other things and superlatives I probably can't name. You're going to have to bring all of those with you guys this Saturday, as the out-of-conference games don't get any easier, but this is the one that a lot of people have had circled. It's the 14th-ranked Miami Hurricanes down at the U. 3:30 the kickoff coming up on Saturday. And this is obviously a very tough opponent, ranked opponent, power conference in their building, and it's obviously going to be a real, real tough one that's going to require all those things you said a few moments ago, coach, and then some for your guys.
Yeah, certainly a stiff challenge for us. It's this is the Miami Hurricanes. It's the University of Miami. It's they're a top 15 opponent right now. One of the better programs in the country for not only this year or a couple years here. This is not a flash in the pan school or program. This is decades of really impressive players that have came through there, coaches, a lot of impressive games, wins, all of that. This team's no different. They got a lot of great players. You know, they're fast on defense. They fly to the ball. They get to you with bad intentions. They have playmakers on the perimeter on offense. They're getting solid quarterback play. Big physical team. You know, Toledo's, you know, going to have their hands full or our hands full this weekend, and certainly, you know, we'll have to give our best effort to make sure that we put our kids in the best position to be successful, and then our guys got to go out and they got to play really hard and do what they're capable of doing, you know, and that will give us a chance to win the football game.
What are some of the things you guys are going to have to do to win this football game, which is, of course, not going to be an easy task?
Well, take care of the football on offense, you know, find a way to get a couple turnovers on defense. You know, and then be really sound in the run game on offense. And certainly we got to do a better job of stopping the run on defense. And we have to play a clean game, you know, in these type of games when you're, you know, where you're equally matched or you're playing a team that can test you at every position. You have to play a clean game. You got to be penalty free. You got to be mistake free the best you can. I know that's, you know, sometimes unattainable in this game, but you have to do your best job to not beat yourself. And one frustrating thing for me is this last 2 weeks, we've been penalized, you know, about as much as anybody in the country. So if we do that again this week, we'll get beat for sure, because though this team's good enough to capitalize on all your mistakes.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle. It's Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. Rockets down at the U this Saturday afternoon. Miami is the opponent. The Hurricanes are 14th ranked in the nation. Toughest test so far for the Rockets. Last question before I let you go, coach, and thanks so much as always for the time, for the insight and the analysis. When you have a game like this, and at the same time, and we've mentioned this in a couple of times we've talked so far this season, you're out of conference schedule before MAC play has been getting steadily tougher and tougher as it goes forward, culminating with this one before MAC play starts. We kind of brought it up in one of our past talks in the last couple of weeks, but how important is that to have steadily tougher opponents as each of these first couple of weeks goes by leading into a game like this?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think what lies ahead is what you've prepared for your whole off season. You don't come in here in the off-season workouts and, you know, set some goals and say, hey, you know, we want to be fourth in the MAC and we want to, you know, be 500 in our non-conference and we want to go down to Miami and play well. You know, you, anytime that you talk about what your goals look like or what your team and with your captains and what you focus on, it's to win the MAC West. It's to represent the western side of our conference in the MAC championship game. It's to win all our non-conference games. And when you have a chance to go play on a, you know, on a national stage, to go represent the University of Toledo in this great city very well and go win the game, you know. So whether it's Elon, whether it's Tulsa, whether it's going and handling the trip in Nevada, or whether it's this game, or whether it's in 2 weeks Eastern Michigan coming here to the Glass Bowl, you know, you relatively handle them all the same, but you've got to understand that, you know, you've gotten to this point in time, you're a 3-0 team, you're playing a really good opponent, you've made it a bigger game than maybe a couple of the ones in the past because you earned it. So, you know, you got to keep earning them. They don't get easier. They get progressively harder for a multitude of different reasons, and you just got to get your team ready to play and go. You know, give it your best shot.
No doubt about that, Coach. Well said. A Rockets W in this one would certainly be one that you guys absolutely earned. Head Coach Jason Cantlell of Toledo Rockets taking a few minutes to talk some Rocket football with us. Rockets down in Miami to take on the 14th-ranked Hurricanes this Saturday afternoon, 3:30, the kickoff time. Coach, best of luck out there. It's going to be a fun one, I think, either way. And hopefully we're talking about a 4-0 Rocket team getting a ranked power conference win when we reconvene next week.
Thanks, Jim. Go Rockets.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Cantlell, with us here on the Extravaganza. And this is the one, of course, as we know, everyone's been circling for a Rockets team that has shown once again that they are capable of putting up offensive numbers with the best of them, you know, in college football. Logan Woodside, who's on all those quarterback and other watch lists out there, is tying Bruce Gradkowski's record of 6 touchdown passes in a single game. Bruce did that twice, by the way, for the Rockets. Logan has now done it once. But then you have to have the other guys that are actually catching the ball, like Cody Thompson, who joined Mike Miller on Drive Time yesterday. And then you have Terry Swanson, the senior, running the way he's doing. But at the same time, there are some things, even in that Tulsa game, that are cause for concern when you're going up against an opponent of this caliber in Miami. 13 penalties. Don't even need to mention how many yards it was all worth. 13 penalties is way, way, way too much. Going down 21-7 in the first quarter, 28-7 early in the second quarter, you can't be going down by those kind of deficits because of penalties and defensive miscues, like how in Tulsa, and it wasn't necessarily miscues, that's just their game, but they still put up, did Tulsa, 423 rushing yards. You give up that many penalties, that many rushing yards to a team like Miami in their building, they will beat you. That's just the dynamics of how college football is. But if they can cut down on a few of those things and have the offense performing as we've seen through 3 weeks, then this will be a very, very fascinating game. And Toledo is one of the types of programs in the Mid-American Conference right now, or in any mid-major right now, that could pull off such a feat. They have, we know what they have offensively, and we know at times they're capable of it on the defensive side. And I know Coach Cantlell likes to, you know, promote that aspect of it too, because it's very easy when you're talking about the Toledo Rockets, not just this year, but these last couple of years, very easy to skim over decent defensive performances because the offense has been so darn good. But this is going to be one of those games for the ages if the Rockets can win and put them in a great, great position, win or lose, especially if they lose a close one, a good back-and-forth type of football game. You do that or win, boy, you put yourself in an outstanding position to start Mid-American Conference play, which, of course, will feature the Rockets getting a bye. They do not play next week before reconvening in that first weekend in October when Eastern Michigan comes to the Glass Bowl to start Mid-American Conference play. And that's going to do it here on this Wednesday edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Mike Miller on Drive Time coming at you next. Mike O'Hara from DetroitLions.com will be joining Mike, as well as Matt Markey, outdoor editor of The Blade, for your weekly outdoor segment. So that's coming up next. Mike Miller with Drive Time from 5 to 6. And then 6 to 8, mentioned this the other day because of Lions on Monday Night Football. And we usually have this program on Monday, but due to the Monday Night Lions football coverage, we moved it to today. Buckeye Roundtable, talking about the win for the Buckeyes against Army and getting them ready for their next game against UNLV this Saturday at the Horseshoe. So Buckeye Roundtable at 6. Mike Miller at Drive Time, though, coming at you next. And we'll do it all again for a fun Thursday tomorrow. See ya.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.